You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League Central. We're talking about the direction of the franchise and whether Chris Sale will be a part of it, talking with Scott Merkin about the Chicago White Sox, talking with broadcaster Jim Rosenhaus about the Indians, and we'll be doing a Danny Salazar update, looking at how they'll use Andrew Miller and how they might still upgrade the offense. Talking Tigers with beat reporter Jason Beck, taking a look at why the Tigers were quiet at the deadline, what that says about their front office, and what they'll do with Michael Fulmer. Talking Royals with beat reporter Jeffrey Flanagan, and we'll be talking about why they mostly sat out the deadline and what the Royals can do to make sure they're buyers again in 2017. And talking Twins with beat reporter Rhett Bollinger, looking at why they did what they did, why they didn't do more, and the future of Jose Berríos. This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks for listening. Rhett, I understand why the Twins make the move they made with Hector Santiago sort of in a vacuum. I mean, it's a better pitcher. The prospect cost isn't that high. Get out from under the Nolasco contract. But it still feels kind of strange to me, just in that it feels like a move. It's a move for a guy who they've only got for one more year. And I'm just not as optimistic about their 2017 chances as they are. But what was the thought process behind that move? Because I thought it was one of the more interesting ones of the deadline.
Yeah, it definitely was an interesting move, like you said. I think that the big thing for them was just kind of getting out of Nolasco's contract. Obviously, Nolasco, you know, wasn't exactly well-liked during his time here. Things didn't go well for him from the start. Obviously, signed a big four-year deal for $49 million, and every year since then, he's had an ERA of 5. I think they've been trying to move him for a while. I thought it was maybe going to be a straight salary dump. So to get a better starting pitcher in return, and Hector Santiago, certainly made some sense. But like you said, Santiago's only under contract for next season. One last year, probably going to make $8 or $9 million. And to lose Alex Meyer, a former top prospect, wants some grace a little bit here. He's been hurt all season for the most part. Hasn't pitched since May 3rd. He really hasn't really been able to, you know, crack this Minnesota team, whether it's been in, you know, the rotation or in relief. Kind of inconsistent mechanics. Kind of a wild card, kind of a flyer for the Angels. But like you said, I think the Twins, you know, just talking with interim GM Rob Anthony, you know, whether or not it's going to happen, they do kind of believe like they can get back and compete next year, which obviously is a little bit, in some ways, to believe just because of how much it takes a setback this year. But last year, obviously, had a decent year, about 500. And I think over the last, I think 62 games now, they're 31-31. But before that, of course, they were 10-33. And that record still counts, too. But I do think they feel like next year with their young core, guys like Max Kepler, Miguel Sano, Byron Buxton getting better to go along with some of the veteran pieces they have, they can be better. And I think in this case, they just thought that, you know, we might as well upgrade to Santiago, who we think is better than Nolasco and has been better than Nolasco for several years now. We have to just, you know, kind of, you know, lose Alex Meyer, who's a wild card. But I think at this point, the Twins organization kind of felt like Meyer wasn't going to contribute much at the big league level anyway.
Do they see a scenario where maybe they try to lock up Santiago beyond 17?
They could. I mean, it certainly could be a possibility. As of right now, I don't know if they're, you know, too deep into that yet, but it certainly could be a thing they could do because they are looking for starting pitching beyond just next year. This is a team that doesn't really have too much rotation depth. They do have some, you know, top pitching prospects that are double-A right now that are maybe a couple years away. I guess it kind of develops, but I'm sure it's something they'd be open to, you know, in the next year or so with Santiago.
From the sort of more conventional selling moves that they made, the Abad deal, the Nunez deal, who should Twins fans have an eye on from the return there? Who really stands out among the guys that they brought in that maybe people should be excited about?
I think the big one was the Eduardo Nunez trade. To be able to get a left-handed prospect and Adalberto Mejia was a good get for them. He's a guy that the MLBpipeline.com, you know, has been pretty high on for a couple years now. And a guy that I believe Baseball America had in their top 100 recently, a big left-hander who throws strikes, but you know, has a pretty good velocity as well. An interesting piece for them, a guy that they think could maybe even be up in the big leagues as soon as this season. So the nice thing is he's kind of close to major league ready. They didn't want to do a deal for example, Alex, their big deal a couple years ago was when they traded Denard Span. They got Meyer, who at the time was in low A, and it was a big prospect, but it was still kind of far from the majors. We saw that it never really, you know, got to the majors in terms of being a productive piece for the Twins. Whereas at least with Mejia, they know that he's a little bit closer to MLB ready. He's already at AAA. Could be up soon here. Fernando Abad was a guy they signed as a minor league free agent. Be able to flip him. Prospect like Pat Light from the Red Sox, who hard thrower, can reach, you know, up to 100 miles per hour. A little bit of a thing in terms of, you know, issues in terms of command, and his rate is pretty high, but has a pretty good strikeout rate as well to go with it. So if he can kind of harness his stuff, it's certainly worth flipping a guy like Abad for, you know, 6 years of control of a hard thrower like Light. He could be part of a, you know, this team's kind of future bullpen here. So I think those are kind of the two big names that to look out for the Twins fans, and it seems like a pretty good return. It seems like, you know, interim GM Rob Ante actually did a pretty good job here leading up to the deadline, but obviously also didn't make any trades to move some guys like Kurt Suzuki or Brandon Kinstler, maybe kind of rumored to be traded, but obviously that's going to happen in August as well.
Yeah, and you kind of tee me up for my next question here, which is this turned out to be very much a seller's market. Some of the packages that teams got for pitchers in particular were enormous. Why didn't they move more guys? Why did they hold on to more of the pieces rather than trying to pick up a couple of more parts of the next good Twins team, which, as you know, they hope could be as soon as next year?
Well, I think that this is Irvin Santana. I mean, just talking to Rob Antony leading up to it, he didn't seem like he was very eager to trade him, but I kind of felt like Santana would have some pretty as a guy who's really been on a roll here for the last couple of months, has been one of the better starting pitchers in baseball over that span. And as a veteran, he's 33 years old, you know, kind of profiles more of a, you know, mid-rotation guy, obviously, than being up top. I thought they could have got something good in return. He's still under contract for two more years, but the Twins kind of believe the same thing. They don't really have much rotation depth, so if they were going to trade him, they wanted some big pieces in return because they feel like he could be a part of their future as well and be part of that rotation the next couple of years. And Kurt Suzuki was one of those, a little bit of a head-scratcher too, because unlike Santana, Suzuki is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So to not trade him was a little bit of a surprise, especially with teams looking for some catching help out there. I do think that there's a good chance he could be moved in August. But at this point, Santana could be moved in the offseason. You never know. Trevor Plouffe's another name that's kind of been bounced around, but he's been on the DL now for over a month. I think that kind of hurt his trade value. But also the same thing could be available in August and definitely in the wintertime, especially with the emergence of Miguel Sano at third. Just from talking to Rob Antony after the deadline, it seems like he wanted to get some of those done deals, or some of those deals done, and did have the table. It just never really got to that point. So I think he was excited about the deals that he did make, but he also did admit that I think he wishes he would have been able to make a couple other moves there to trade some of the other veteran pieces they did have. And like I said, it could still happen in August. Obviously, it's tougher, as we know, just because of the list and all that. But yeah, even Antony, I think, did it.
The Royals basically sat out the deadline, and from where I sit, that seems wise. This team looks like a very long shot this year and a real contender next year. Is that basically how they looked at it, that there was nothing worth paying the price to add and it was silly to sell?
Absolutely. And I guess you don't consider the Billy Burns acquisition a big deal, huh? In all seriousness, I kind of expected them to sit out, and Dayton Moore hinted that toward me last week that, you know, unless they just had a whopper deal that was going to improve the team this year and going into 2017, they were going to be very careful. They did have some pieces in their war chest they could have dealt, but both of those guys got hurt, and Wade Davis and Luke Hochever. Not that I think any of those deals were likely, and I really didn't think there was a big market for Kendrys Morales, who is going to be a free agent after this year. There was some interest in Edison Volquez, but seriously, with as thin as their rotation is going into 2017, I think the front office is really considering, you know, bringing Eddie back at some capacity, either through a QO or even an extension.
There was so much chatter about Davis, and I suspect maybe that was just external as people looked at what elite relievers were fetching in trade, and it was ridiculous. And you'd have to be at least intrigued. But even if Davis had been healthy and had been somebody that teams wouldn't be worried about health-wise to acquire, was there ever any real chance that they were going to move him?
About less than 1%, probably. You know, like any organization, they're going to field phone calls, but they were not shopping either one, him or Hoch. You know, Wade Davis, this team is built, as you know, on pitching and defense and a great bullpen. That's how they've won the last 3 years, turned this organization around. That's been, you know, a trademark of any Dayton Moore team. Is even in the bad years, they had really solid bullpens, and that wasn't going to be a factor in terms of dealing Wade Davis, because, you know, this bullpen this year has not been, you know, as much of a shutdown bullpen as last year. So if you were to take away Wade Davis, you know, really you're down to one reliable start bullpen guy, I mean, and that's Kelvin Herrera. Joaquin Soria has been ineffective for most of the year. Hoch has been hurt. So, you know, trading Wade Davis, you know, obviously nobody's untouchable, but it would have taken just a whopper package, because you're kind of sending the message to your core players that you've given up on this year and maybe even next year.
You talk about the thin rotation depth, and it occurs to me that one move they could have made, and look, this is admittedly a very difficult thing to do, but you look at what the Giants did, and they go and get Matt Moore, who is not only an intriguing starter, but a guy who's controllable for a while.
Right.
The Royals don't necessarily have the pieces at this point to do something like that, but did they consider trying to bring in one of those kind of pieces who could help now and be a piece beyond this year?
Yeah, I had said last week that they were, you know, in the market for another bat in right field or a fifth starter. It wasn't going to be a splashy guy, but maybe someone like a Jake Odorizzi or even a Matt Moore, who's a little bit more splashy. But because of that thin rotation going into the next year, they do have some guys coming back. Jason Vargas will come back from Tommy John surgery, but, you know, that's rolling the dice, too. You never know with those guys. Mike Minor right now is on a rehab assignment, coming back from labrum surgery. So, you know, they're going to cross their fingers that maybe one of those two guys, or maybe even both, could be, you know, an addition to the rotation next year. But I think at the deadline, they definitely looked at possibly finding a, you know, a fifth starter that, like you said, they could control, and that's definitely going to be a target in the offseason.
Do you see them potentially moving anybody in August? You mentioned Morales, you mentioned Volquez. Sounds like you're saying not Volquez, but do you think maybe they flip Morales somewhere in August?
I wouldn't be shocked. You know, I think he's a guy who might have cleared waivers already, and he could be moved after the non-waiver trade deadline. There's always going to be teams that are going to be needing a bat. You know, you're limiting the market because he's mostly a DH, so it's going to have to be an American League team. And, you know, I know there was some interest from the Astros and Rangers, but, you know, nothing could quite get worked out. So if there is anybody that gets moved, yeah, it's probably Kendrys.
As you look ahead to this off season, this team, it's a pretty fine line. I mean, they had certainly some significant injuries, but I think they are a really good example of what a fine line it is between success and not getting where you want to be, and not that they couldn't still, but it seems unlikely. What are they looking to do over the off season? And I realize it's August, but even so, what are the things they want to accomplish in order to get this club back to where this time next year they're maybe adding a Cueto rather than dealing with rumors about moving their closer?
Well, I would suspect that they're definitely going to have to try to fill the hole in right field. Now, Paulo Orlando has at times looked like he could be an everyday player, but he just doesn't quite have the pop, and they need that in this lineup. And of course, we mentioned before, they definitely need at least one more starter. Dayton Moore likes to go into each spring training with, you know, at least 9 or 10 rotation candidates, and he did this year, and it still wasn't enough. So that'll definitely be a target in the offseason. But, you know, the other thing, too, is I think they just need the offseason to rest. This is a team that's, you know, been on a high-wire act since August of 2014, where every single game was basically do or die. And that's how I think that just took a toll in terms of their energy. And several players and members of the coaching staff have brought that up to me in the last couple of weeks that, it's just kind of a team that's just, it's just tired right now. And do they have enough to, you know, make an impact again the rest of this season? Maybe. But, you know, they had a horrible July. They lost 19 out of 26, which tied a franchise record. And you just kind of just notice the energy isn't what it was even a year ago.
What kind of, and this is to some extent kind of sounds silly, because this is an organization that's now emerged where it really expects to win on a year-in, year-out basis, but what is the kind of level of urgency to make sure that 17 team is at that level again, just given that, you know, they've really built for the long term, and they there was a plan, they built a team that was not to win 1 year, but, you know, there are a lot of potential free agents after next year. Is there some pressure to sort of make sure to really capitalize on that window for 17?
Yeah, absolutely, and they talk about that a lot. But as you mentioned, they are built for the long term. They have signed some guys, to long term deals, and you know that core of free agents, they've got to sit down as an organization and you know try to decide which guys they can keep and which guys they can't. Where do they have depth, and where do they not? So you know they've done a pretty good job of keeping some of their homegrown talent. You know, a lot of people thought nationally that they had no chance to keep Alex Gordon, and they turned around and got him. They probably overpaid a little bit for Ian Kennedy, but, you know, he's got four more years left on his deal. Long-term extension with Salvador Perez, with Yordano Ventura. So they're still looking for the seasons beyond 2017, too. But, yeah, there is a sense of urgency that, you know, with the Hosmers and Moustakas and Canes, that next year, you know, if nothing happens this year, that next year has got to be a year that they make a strong, strong run.
Scott, it is weird to think that the White Sox didn't make any deals at the non-waiver trade deadline, not only because they were expected to, but because there was so much other news that it's sort of hard to process that some of that news wasn't a trade. First, just sort of philosophically, I mean, I think people were really expecting this team to make some moves. There was some talk about them kind of recalibrating. They didn't do any of that. What was the thought process behind holding on to their assets and just sort of taking it to the end of the year and refiguring things in the offseason?
Yeah, you know, I think what kind of happened is this team obviously had the great start to the year, and they've been faltering, you know, barring 8 or 9, 10-game stretches ever since. And Rick Hahn, the general manager, came out the Thursday of the last homestand. I want to say it was the first game of a four-game series against Detroit, and basically, you know, admitted the obvious. They were mired in mediocrity. They had been for a while, and they needed to make some changes, and White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf was pretty much open to anything. I think with that said, everyone expected that Rick was going to do the old Roland Heeman routine at the winter meetings and put a table out in front of U.S. Cellular Field and just say, we're open for business, come make your offers, we're getting rid of everyone. But, you know, it doesn't, as you know, it doesn't work that way. And I think, you know, I understand that people get the Chris Sale, Jose Quintana situation if you're trading them, because you don't have to trade them, that you're going to ask for exactly what you want and you're not going to move unless you get exactly what you want. They're too valuable pieces. Not just as two of the best starters in baseball, they're both left-handed, and they're both under control, Sale through 19 and Quintana through 20 with team options. So they're just, you know, huge commodities. But I think people were a little upset about, you know, maybe you couldn't move a David Robertson or Todd Frazier or Melky Cabrera. But, you know, that there may be more value in the Sox mind than in other teams' mind going to that, especially with a lot of the closers that were moved. Maybe there just weren't teams looking for a closer at that point. So I think the Sox basic thought was that, you know, they had offers out there, they had some deals to go through, but there was nothing that they really took serious. I don't know if taking serious is the right word. And they thought that was advanced enough where they had to even bring it to, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf. And they're gonna wait in the off season, and I you know, the biggest thing Sox fans want is they want a direction, I think. And the team wants that too. Rick even said no more of kind of this piecing stuff together. They want a team, if they're going to go rebuild, start making moves. If you're going to go for it, go after the bigger free agents too. So that will be played out once, you know, November begins after the World Series is over.
So that's the question then. And as you, as somebody who watches this team, what is your expectation? I mean, they're not at this point going to clearly say one way or the other. Things can change between now and November, obviously. But what is your expectation when we get to the offseason and they start the process of building the 2017 White Sox? Which of those directions do you think they're going to go?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question, and I asked Rick Hahn that during the conference call trade deadline day after 3:01 p.m. Central Time, and he didn't want to give an answer, understandably so. You have guys, you have, you know, active roster of 25, Robin Ventura coaches who are not exactly cashing in the last 50-some games. They're playing hard, trying to win as many games as possible. So, you know, they don't want to hear, oh, yeah, by the way, when the season's done, we're going full rebuild, and, you know, that's that. But I think they will go more in the rebuild direction. But it's an interesting conundrum because of the fact that you have Chris Sale, you have Jose Quintana, you have Jose Abreu, you have Adam Eaton, all in really solid contracts. That's a pretty good nucleus right there. You have another year of Melky Cabrera. You have Todd Frazier under control. You have, you know, James Shields for a couple of years, you know, who isn't the same James Shields that he was James Shields when he was leading Tampa Bay to the World Series, but he's still a pretty decent, you know, back end of the rotation guy. Miguel Gonzalez is a nice find. So again, it's that weird middle ground with the White Sox. I think they're going to go more rebuild, but I could see them turning around and just saying, we're going all in, we're going for it, because they have so many
pieces that teams would want that they have under control right now that they can use. But the thing is, they just can't, you know, they're going to need a catcher. We can go through a number of different positions they need to upgrade on, but they're going to need some things to do, and they need kind of an impact back because the offense has been extraordinarily inconsistent all year. So it just depends on where they would see the payroll, where they want to spend, and I think they'll go from there and decide, okay, we're not going to go after the $100 million type of guys. We're going to go rebuild, and that's probably the decision that they're making as we speak right now, or that's ongoing being made, being analyzed.
How much do you think this winter's market factors into that? I mean, to some extent, you have to have a long-term direction that is sort of independent of the market in any given winter. On the other hand, you can't ignore the realities, and the reality is that there's not a whole lot to be had this winter. There's not that sort of level of impact players. It's going to be awfully hard to make a team really, really good in free agency this coming offseason. How does that factor into this decision, do you think?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, too. I should, you know, add in, they do a lot of good things through trades over the years, so that is another thing that can factor in. But you're right. I mean, that's one of the things I think that factored in with Sale and Quintana is, you know, Sox fans obviously are not happy right now. It's two really rough years back-to-back, and this year made even tougher because of the fact that they were 23-10 and had a 6.5-game lead at one point in the American League Central, albeit, you know, May 8th or May 9th, whatever it was. But, you know, let's say they were going with Boston, trying to make a trade with Boston, and they're asking for Mookie Betts or Xavier Bogaerts or Jackie Bradley Jr. as part of the deal, you know, along with Benintendi or Kopech or whoever else you're asking in the prospect. Well, Boston is in the thick of a playoff race, and they're not going to trade a guy who's any one of those three probably could be, you know, in the MVP voting. But maybe in the offseason, let's say they get a wild card and they go out in the first round, or the first game, I'm sorry, there is no more than one round of wild card, but they lose that game. Maybe they're going to say, okay, we need to get Chris Sale. Let's include Mookie Betts. So I think that's part of the market, too, where they weren't going to force anything now. But I think you made a good point that that's why I think they're leaning. They need to change the culture. It's not like they have bad players. They have a really good clubhouse. They've had a good clubhouse the last 2 years, no problems at all. And, you know, in terms of overall fit, yeah, you had the Chris Sale thing with the jerseys and all that and the Adam LaRoche thing in spring training. But I'm saying not a problem with team chemistry. It's just not a good fit for the last 2 years, it seems like, on this team. And they kind of need to change the culture, which is why I think they're going to go more rebuild. Now, does that mean they're going to trade Sale and trade Quintana, which would help rebuild a growing farm system, but still, you know, a pretty mediocre farm system that needs to be rebuilt? Do they trade one, or do they trade, you know, keep those two and use them as kind of, along with Rodon and Carson Fulmer and Tim Anderson, as kind of the fulcrum of the rebuild and kind of trade the guys around them? But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I would think still they go more rebuild because, like you said, of the market availability too.
It's been a lot going on in Indians land here lately. Some of it very exciting, some of it less so. We'll start with some of the less good news. Danny Salazar goes to the DL. It sounds like the general tone on this is not all that much worry. Is this, I don't know if precautionary is a way to put it, but is it fair to say this is not something at the moment they're terribly concerned about?
No, I think precautionary is a good word. Encouraging for a DL stint, it might be a decent word as well. And I think what they are encouraged about is the fact that the MRI came back and showed that his elbow is structurally sound, which is huge. There's just some inflammation in there that he's been trying to work through for the last month or so, and the results have not been good. So after a short outing on Monday night, he expressed some concern, and they took him in for the MRI, and at least they have some clarity on the situation, and they truly do believe that at the end of the 15 days that he should be ready to go and at least be able to recapture some of that good form that made him an all-star in the first half.
What do they do in the rotation in the interim?
In the interim, they're going to bring up Mike Clevinger, and he'll pitch tomorrow against the Twins, and when you look at their young pitching prospects, he's certainly in the top of that mix. I think coming into the season, both he and Cody Anderson were thought of as two of the good young pitchers. And Anderson's had a difficult year. He's right now in the bullpen for the Tribe. But Clevinger has been at AAA most of the season, a couple of major league starts, but nothing extended in terms of major league time. But he's had that good development here at AAA, and they feel that he can step in and contribute. So we'll see. He has had some rough outings in the big leagues so far, and we'll see how much he's learned after an extended period in the minor leagues now.
The brighter news here recently, of course, is that they bring in Andrew Miller, and I tend to be very skeptical when teams say, well, we're going to mix and match. We are going to do matchups. We're not going to do – whenever they say anything other than we're going to have this guy as our guy in the ninth, I tend to be skeptical because nearly always it ends up with one guy being the guy. I'm a little less skeptical in this case, and I'm not sure why, but it seems to me they might actually follow through with this. Do you think that Miller – They split duties in the ninth. How do you think this ultimately shakes out between now and the end of September?
I really think they're going to take it game by game. It may develop where one of the two, Miller or Cody Allen, does end up closing most of the games. That may be how it shakes out, and we'll see. But at least at the outset, I think Terry Francona wants to keep his options open for those key situations that may come your way in the eighth inning, and he might say, hey, look, I think the matchup here is best to have Miller in the ballgame in the eighth inning. Or it might be Cody Allen in the eighth that makes more sense, even if you look ahead to the ninth, and maybe having Miller in the ninth is better in that situation. So I really do think they're going to keep it open. But we may get to the end of the year, and if you check in then, it may say that Miller ended up closing a bunch of them or Allen ended up closing most. And I think they're just leaving that open, and it appears as if neither pitcher really cares what the situation is. They just want to contribute to a team that they feel has a good chance to make it to the playoffs.
Is there any likelihood they get particularly creative? Because I think that, you say this, and not you, the club says this, and it seems likely that even if they split the save chances, typically when you do that, these two guys end up pitching the eighth and ninth. Is there any likelihood they get a little more aggressive? They're in a situation where it's a one-run game in the sixth, big game, couple of lefties coming up, and you go to Miller there because that is really the moment of decision in the game, or do they maybe not get that aggressive?
I think it's a possibility, but I don't think you would see it that often. If it happens once or twice, that might be a lot, and some of that may depend on how they feel about their other lefty, which right now is Kyle Crockett, who, since coming up most recently from AAA, has been tremendous. So he came on and got some key outs in the ballgame Tuesday night in the sixth inning. So you look at that, and that may be the dictator as far as whether they want to bump Miller down or Allen down in those types of situations. I think it would be unlikely. I really do think they want to save them for the tail end of the game and not burn them that early, especially if they feel comfortable with what they have in the earlier innings.
It's a good feeling in Detroit right now. People were sort of crowning the Indians, and yet you look at the standings, and it's a very close race in the AL Central, which kind of makes this even more interesting that this historically very aggressive club sat still at the deadline. Now, they do have a new general manager, but they have the same owner. Is this an indication of what's to come in future years? Is this the new normal? Is this just the nothing added up? What goes into something as unusual as the Tigers being quiet at deadline?
Is it the new norm? I don't know if it's to this degree, but I think the days of them just selling every asset they have in the farm system is kind of over. It's and I know it's talking with people, it almost sounds like gibberish when you talk to them about collecting minor league talent and having an eye for the future. It's been years since we've heard that here, but that really seems to be an imprint that, yeah, they were interested in making upgrades if there was something obvious and something that wasn't going to cost them a ton. But the way it related to me is you look at the other teams that were in the market. You look at the Indians, the Cubs, the Astros, deep farm systems. Farm systems with several prospects that the Tigers, there will be probably top prospects in the Tigers prospect rankings, to be fair. They got to that point because they didn't sell off talent at other years when they were close to contending, but didn't want to break up that group. the Tigers are in some ways trying to get to that point right now. It doesn't mean they're going to wait for like 3 or 4 years and then go all in, but they're trying to get to a point where they can have enough prospects to make a move at the deadline, but still have guys to fill in holes where they feel like they need them. And really, in a lot of ways, that's what they're doing right now. They're counting on injury returns, especially with Jordan Zimmermann, to help out the rotation and give them that trade deadline type of boost. But by having Daniel Norris at AAA right now and having him stretched out, they hope that they have that rotation insurance that if somebody goes down, somebody beyond Mike Pelfrey, that they have somebody who can come in and not only hold down a rotation spot, but give them a chance to win every 5 days.
As they have gotten close here, and they're suddenly, again, very close and very much in a race, do you anticipate, you know, maybe not those kinds of blow-up-the-farm moves, but do you anticipate them looking to make some moves in August? Do you anticipate them trying to do some waiver trades to sort of patch up the roster around the edges and make sure that they take advantage of what has become an opportunity?
You know, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch, and that's where that ownership impact might be felt, because you know, they're in luxury tax territory. You're going to be paying like $1.30 on the dollar or whatever because of that penalty. Now, granted, you're talking about a smaller share of salary this late in the year, but you know, it still adds up, obviously. But you're also looking at guys who most likely because of contracts or why they clear waivers. So you shouldn't necessarily have to pay as much for those guys. So you know, do they look for you know maybe a reliever to sneak through? I'd be surprised if a big-name reliever or a major contributor sneaks through, given how much relievers are in demand right now, but you never know. I think they might look at that. You know, maybe a second lefty, something around there. You know, maybe an extra outfielder, although – it sure sounds like with the return to J.D. Martinez imminent that they feel like between him and Tyler Collins and Upton and Maven that they had that group pretty secure while also throwing in Mike Avilas in the super utility role and even Andrew Romine for a game every now and then in center. Could they look for a bench bat? That's going to depend on whether Brad Ausmus wants to stick with named man bullpen. Right now he seems to. But we'll see if things change here as that rotation keeps eating up innings. They've got Dustin Malkin in the bullpen, who I think pitched a total of 4 outings in July, which even if you take the All-Star break into account, is an incredibly low amount of work for a major league reliever.